y'all. This is Heaving Bosoms, the podcast where two best friends recap romance novels while venerating the genre and being nasty squirrels. Welcome back for part two, HBs. When we left off yesterday, Asbeth had just been summoned to a secret midnight rendezvous with her terrible ex-fiancé, who, if you'll recall, is set on taking her home by force now that marriage is off the table. This is part two of Bull Moon Rising by Ruby Dixon.
So she goes, and it is Barnabas, and she's like, how did you know I was here? And he's like, it was a lucky guess. I saw Gwenna.
Also, it's midnight in like a sketchy part of Vast Warren City. And so Kip walks her there. I really like that.
This is when they go to the King's Onion.
Yeah. And this is when she's like, I'm going to be so gross, he doesn't want to get near me. Oh, she chomps into that
heinous
onion.
Yeah. Fucking heinous.
And at one point, he says, like, you are going to marry me. And she chomps into it again and makes sure that some of the onion sprays onto his face. Mm. It's the best.
Yeah. So he basically threatens her.
Yeah, he's blackmailing her. He says, you're going to marry me or everybody will find out that you're being a bad woman and you'll be ruined and it'll be terrible. And then she doesn't want to back down because, again, she knows that, like, it's more likely that he kills her than invests any funds to get artifacts for the hold. And so she's like, okay, but if you do that, then I will just marry whatever holder's son I see first. I will make somebody else the heir.
We also, this is the point where we know that there is a holder that is spending a lot of money to get artifacts, which means fledgling teams are going to be sent down to get stuff. It's good practice and all of that, but they're going to be spending a lot of money. And she registers that it's Barnabas and he is decided to take Honori Hold by force. So she is like, what the hell do I do about this? How do I tell my dad? What do I do? And then she realizes what needs to happen is I need to find artifacts and get them back to my hold, essentially.
As soon as before he does.
Yeah. So Hawk gets back from the retrieval mission. Early. And he walks in and Gwenna is like, what are you doing here? And he's like, why are you being so fucking weird? And where's my wife?
Yeah.
And Gwenna is like, she is out with a nobody. And he's like, what, with a man?
You're gonna tell me everything.
Yeah. And so Gwenna does tell him quite
some
a bit. And but he's pissed.
She looks at him and she says, what you have to understand is that Asbeth has never had anyone. She thinks that it's her responsibility to take care of everyone else and no one has ever taken care of her.
I know you don't understand, and I know I'm only giving you half-arsed answers, but just trust me when I say she's doing this because she thinks it's the right thing to do. I know Asbeth pretends like she has it all under control, but in her heart, she's a people pleaser. Just because she hasn't had anyone love her back doesn't mean she doesn't want to be loved.
Yeah.
And my whole heart broke. So he does go. And he is horny because he's thinking about spanking her to punish her. And it makes him a little horny. And then he does show up and she sees him walk in that room and she's like, oh, gotta go. Bye, Barnabas. And goes and grabs him. And he's just huffing and puffing.
And he's like, and who's wanting to kill?
And oh, my God. He's so mad because he realizes she's being blackmailed. Yeah. And he's like so mad about that specifically. And she says, she looks up at him and she's like, You're growling. And he, in his head, he's like, am I?
Am I?
It's probably because I hate this. I hate this place full of men who probably wouldn't think twice about groping my wife. I hate that she's put herself in this situation. And I hate that no one's told me anything. So I'm probably going to growl for a while. Anyone would in my situation.
Yeah.
And he tells her, this was so cute, and I love this.
Yes.
I'm going to ask you one more time, and you need to answer me honestly. Do I need to go in there and kill someone? I won't ask any more than that. Just tell me who, and I'll make it happen. I can hide the body where it will never be found. Uh-huh. And he's already started plotting how to hide their body.
In Old Pro.
And then they're walking home and he takes her down the wrong street and boom, they're in front of a brothel and it's a Torian orgy in the street. And then we get some fucking voyeur exhibitionism from the goddess herself.
Sure. Yeah.
He is like, you need to see. He's like, look at them, Aspeth. And he like holds her tight to his chest and takes her chin and holds her face to watch this Torian have sex with a sex worker.
And there's one Torian who has a knot already, because like a very small percentage of Torians have their knot all the time. And he thinks it's a curse because like, how can you function with that much like lust and instinct flowing through you all the time? But he's like, yeah, you're going to watch. You're going to watch as he takes that, as she takes that knot. And then she says, I can't see anything. And he says, I love that she sounds upset about that. And then she goes, describe it to me. It's hot.
And at one point he's like, he's bigger than you expected, isn't he? That's how big my cock is, little bird. I'm going to hollow you out when I take you. Jeez, but I'll make it so fucking good you won't even care. And I was like, all right, Hawk.
All right, Hawk. Come on,
let's
man.
Go. So then he does finger the hell out of her and she comes in that alley and he
ruts into her back until he comes in his pants.
Yep. And I love a cum in his pants.
I love it.
I love a cum in his pants. It killed me. He calls her little bird and it killed me every time.
Yeah, that's his pet name for her throughout the book.
Incredible.
Once he starts having feelings that he can't quite pinpoint. I don't understand
After they come together in the alley, he is suddenly like, he remembers that she won't tell him about the man she was meeting and he gets angry and then he proceeds to avoid her for days.
Yeah. In the alley, though, he gets right up into her ear after she's coming down from her orgasm and he says, let that be a lesson to you.
Oh, I'm so fucking mad at him.
And then he ignores her for days.
Uh-huh.
And she's like bereft, you know? She's like, I know he's supposed to be a marriage of convenience, but I really like him and he doesn't want me and everything sucks. So they end up going down into the tunnels as a team of fledglings in order to try and find artifacts for Barnabas.
Of note, he is not here for the first time they go down.
Mm-hmm. Magpie has made it so that he's on a retrieval mission so that she can be the only teacher in the tunnels with them.
Mm-hmm.
And she's apparently said that they're going to drop 13, mm-hmm. which is bad luck and also, like, it's notoriously bereft of artifacts, you know, I think it says. And they're all really confused. But Aspeth is like, oh, God, this was so relatable. Okay. Because she's like doing the most exciting thing that she could possibly be doing. She has been looking forward to discovering and seeing Old Prel for her entire life, right? But she's having some relationship issues, and so nothing is very exciting right now, okay? And I was like, Aspeth, stop putting a mirror in front of my face.
Yeah. So they get down to wherever their little campsite is going to be, like their rest area, and Magpie is like, all right, be free, and fuck off, and is like, head off into the tunnels.
Yeah, and she's thinking to herself, like, you're our teacher, though. Like, Hawk would never just stay behind while we went down. Mm-hmm. Everybody's a little bit weird about it. But Magpie's like, you know what? I'll watch the bag so it's not as heavy for you. And Lark is like, okay, you're my aunt. And like throws down her bag. Lark. So everybody else throws down their bag. Lark is heartbreaking.
And they do go. And we learn that Gwenna has magical blood in her because the only thing that they brought with them is a dousing rod. Mm-hmm. And they do give that dousing rod a shot and they find a spot and they do hammer pickaxe their way through it and they find a dead body with a ring.
Yeah.
Well, we don't know about that yet.
No, I love this blind as a bat Azbeth because she's like, oh, look, it's a statue laying on the ground. How neat is that? And then they're
there is a statue.
Organic.
There's just a bundle of something on the ground. And she's like, oh, I know, backpack, but she thinks that's weird.
Also a statue.
Oh.
And then they're like, oh, no, I missed that is a statue. Look at that thing. Do those things look the same? And she's like, honestly, I don't know. In her brain.
Yeah. Yeah,
so
fair.
So they end up freaking out and running the fuck out of Moon. There as fast as they can. Yeah. This is actually the second day they're down in the mines because the first day they sort of give up after being attacked by spiders.
They run into a spider nest.
Yeah. And then they go up and Magpie is drunk as hell and she's passed out.
Completely passed out.
And all of their belongings are like shredded and crumbled and the water's poured out and the food is wrecked. And they realize Magpie tries to be like, it's probably the Rattlings, you know? Mm-hmm. And they're like, Rattlings would have also eaten your entire face. No, this is sabotage, you dumbass. Like, of course it is.
And then Azbeth is broken. Like, something breaks. And she's like, I am done. And Gwenna, sweetest baby, grumpy angel Gwenna.
Yeah.
Basically gives her a talking to and is like, don't give up. And she's like, you've come this far. Why would you let a man like him defeat you now?
Talking about Barnabas. Yeah.
Whoa. That.
And then they go back down into the mine. They find that dead body. And now they're running for their lives away from nothing. Honestly, it's a dead body. He can't do anything. But yeah. It's scary. So they're running back up. And when they get there, Magpie is standing there and Hawk is standing right behind her. And she's like, oh, shit. So they tell them everything that happened. And according to guild law, what happens in this situation is that everything gets seized by the guild and they have to make sure that like it's safe and that there aren't any like artifacts of power or whatever. And it's a whole thing because, this is a notoriously blank space as far as artifacts are concerned. But Gwenna did the dowsing. They break through a tiny thin wall and then they get into this place where like it's pretty obvious that like it's an old Prelian grave robber. It's not a guild person. It's older than that. And so they're like, we have to get back down there because there has to be an artifact. Yeah.
The inspiration for him was that the first like ancient Egyptian grave robbing / archaeology blah 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 was done by what we consider ancient Egyptians because at that point the pyramids had already been around for like 1300 years and so they were breaking like what we consider ancient Egyptians
of course
were doing all the things. The author's note was so fascinating.
Excited to read it. Yeah,
so he is mad. And the way that Magpie got him out of the way did not take very long. So he gets home and realizes nobody's there and what had happened. And he's like, okay, well, that's fine. They'll be fine. I'm going to go ask around about my wife.
Uh-huh.
And he finds out that she is not a rich merchant's daughter. She is, in fact, a Holder's daughter.
It's so cute because when he's doing this like sort of interview with Torian, who knows a lot about Holder's people, he's like, oh, yeah, that's probably you're probably talking about the Holder's daughter. And he's like, no, definitely not. And he's like, yeah, I guess the Holder's daughter, she travels everywhere with this cat that doesn't stop shedding. And that is when he's like, holy fuckballs, she's the Holder's daughter. Because Squeakers, we haven't talked about him, but her cat is like a prominent character in this book.
Squeakers is also based on a real cat.
Aw, cute.
Yeah, he passed in like 2022, and this was her getting to spend a little bit more time with him.
Oh, no.
Anyway, so he can't figure out if he's mad explicitly, like why he's mad exactly. He's like, she lied to me, but also like, I've started to feel like she's my wife. I care about her. This is attainable. Maybe we can actually be together and be happy. And now I know that she's a Holder's daughter.
A Holder will never, ever accept a Taurian son-in-law or a Taurian heir at that point, right?
And so she explains everything about her family being in debt. They don't have any artifacts. And he's like, okay, I understand why you've done what you've done then. But why did you marry me instead of a Holder's son? And she tells him, I might as well be someone I want to be. And I want to be part of the guild. And I want to be your wife. I want to do the conquest moon with you just like I promised. Even if I married strategically, no one would care about me. They just want my title. When you look at me, I feel like you want me, even if you hate the fact that you do. Oh. I know my timing is terrible, and you think I'm manipulating you. I'm not. I like it when you touch me. I like talking to you. I like talking to you more than anyone else in the world, and I want more of both. If I was truly manipulating you, I'd suck your cock. She pauses. Though now that I mention it, I really do want to suck your cock. And then she does. She sucks a dick for the first time. He's super into it, unsurprisingly. And boy.
And then he's trying to return the favor. And in the middle of returning the favor, he gets overcome and he can't get the thought out of his head, this intrusive thought that she's a spy. And so
we get to that part.
Yes.
He thinks to himself, because she says, thank you for trusting me. And he's like, I want to tell her that I don't, that I'm letting her use me because of the conquest moon, but it's not quite the truth. I do want her. And then he says all of the ways he wants her. And then he says, I want to watch her dote on her ridiculous cat because I know she's got an incredibly soft heart that needs something to love. I want to be one of the things she loves, and I'm melted into the ground, listener.
Yes. Yeah, because you are a mere mortal, Sabrina, okay? So then when he's returning the favor, fingering her, she's just about to climax, and he says, are you sure you're not a Holder spy? Are you sure you're not here for that? And she is devastated and pushes his hand away. Well, and she's like,
and she's not even mad that he asked her. She understands why he asked her. It is specifically that he asked her in such a vulnerable moment.
And she's literally opening her body to him. And he's like, yarr, is this what you're doing? And so she's like, fuck that and fuck you. She goes basically, like, snuggles with Squeaker, and she's so mad, and he feels terrible.
Well, and this is when she finds out that Gwenna stole a ring off of that dead body. And it turns out it's a link ring, which is like some extremely powerful artifact. And you don't know what it does unless you have both halves. Mm-hmm. And usually they were kept by like partners.
Y'all, this is the ultimate BFF ring. Okay. This is like serious business. One half of a broken heart on one side and one half of a broken heart on the other side. And
when you connect them, literal magic happens.
Yeah. So they're like, the other ring has to be close to wherever the fuck this was, right? Because if they were together, then like their tombs should have been close to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, we have to get back down there by hell or high water.
So they decide to let everybody else in on the secret. And so they tell everybody the truth about what she's a Holder's daughter, why they're there, all of these things. And Meriden's like, yeah, Honori Hold. Turns out Meriden has known the entire time.
Uh-huh. She's just a badass who will keep secrets.
Well, not only that, Meriden's like, we're in different situations, but we're in very similar situations. Yeah. Like, neither of our fathers would want us to be here. We're both doing this to get out from underneath our father's thumbs. Why would I judge you for doing the exact same? Like, why would I out you for that?
Yeah.
I'm doing the same fucking thing. So Aspeth is like, you don't need to do this. I just needed you to know because we're going to be doing blah, blah, blah. And Lark is like, no, we're doing this together. Like, we are a team. And
they're a five.
They're besties. And then they're like, okay, hang on. So what we're going to do is not tell Hawk because he's very by the book.
He's too honorable, everybody.
And we're going to go grab your drunk aunt and get her in on this instead.
Mm-hmm. So also a very complicating factor is that Holt has decided that he is going to stay very close to Asbeth until the conquest moon in like 5 days or something, 3 days maybe, because he not only wants to get her ready physically, but he wants to make up for being such an asshole earlier by like actually getting like really putting effort into getting to know each other and becoming more of a unit. And she's like, fuck, fuck, fuck. All of my dreams are coming true, but at the wrong time. Like, this is terrible. So yeah. They are laying the groundwork. The rest of her five and Magpie are laying the groundwork to get them back into the caves while she is in charge of distracting Hawk. So like one of those nights they go out to dinner and they just get to know each other so much and it's the sweetest and I love them to death. But then as he's going home, he's like, we're doing it tonight. We're going to do it. And she's like, we needed birth control? And he's like, yeah, I did. And I also told you that like that's usually the women's job. And she's like, yeah, totally. When was I supposed to get that though? Like before I met you, when everybody would have been like, who's the holder's daughter fucking? Or like after when we were training for 12 hours a day, when exactly was I supposed to do that? And he's like, good point. All right, I will get you something in the morning. And she's like, uh-huh. So I'm not doing it tonight? And he's like, no, not anymore. Anyway, so then the next day, he gets pressured into going on a rescue mission. And then we find out that it is a rescue mission that is false. It's made up and Magpie made it up in order to get Hawk out of the picture.
Yeah, and their Magpie is bribing people to let them in to the down below, ever below.
The ever below,
and
yeah.
Hawk leaves, and they all make their way there, and they get to the bottom, and oh my god, I already had a not great feeling.
Yeah.
And then she swears on Lark's life that this is fine.
And Lark is like, whoa, I don't love that. Mm-hmm. And then Lark is like, should we all tie ourselves together when we're about to go into this thing? And Magpie does not want Lark tying herself to the rest of them. And then she's like, fine, fuck it. If you want to be by the book and tie yourselves together, that's fine. Do what you want. So they do. And then she gets them in there via portal.
And then she does pull out some magic chalk and scratches that against the ground. And now they are stuck on the other side. And Barnabas shows up. Turns out Barnabas went to Magpie and basically was like, in exchange for you helping me get that ring and also Asbeth, I will basically fund you for the rest of your life.
Magpie went to Barnabas, notably. Magpie sold them out. Once she found out that she was the key to getting their plan done, Barnabas didn't know that there was a ring or another ring. Magpie went to Barnabas and was like, you fund my rest of my fucking life and I will sell anybody out and I will get you both rings and you can have Asbeth. I don't give a fuck about her.
Oh, I missed that Magpie went to Barnabas. I thought Barnabas realized, didn't know about the rings or anything, but I thought that he knew when he realized that she was with Magpie, he saw Magpie as the way in.
Maybe, but my understanding was...
regardless,
they got sold out. Yeah.
Either of these work, and Magpie's a piece of shit.
Yeah.
So is Barnabas.
But Gwenna's the best, because Gwenna told them that there's a curse on the ring, and it has to be given over willingly, or, like, the person's nards will shrivel up, and they'll have gonorrhea forever, or something.
Yep.
And so Barnabas is like, I need you to hand over that ring of your own volition. And she's like, absolutely not. Like, what are you going to do to me? I'm already stuck down here. And he's like, funny you should ask. I have an exploding arrow.
Yeah, we'll just leave you down here for a couple of weeks until you die, and then we'll just come get the ring. It's fine.
We'll get the ring off your dead body. That's fine. Mm-hmm. No problem.
So then they do get caved in, and boy, I'm not a claustrophobic person typically, but this description was rough. Yeah. And Kip, blessed little Kip, does a little squishy squeeze through some rocks. And
y'all, his house is shattered. His house
got shattered, yeah.
It's in pieces. And, like, it's so sad. And he's such a gamer about it, you know? He's just such a pal. Yeah, so he goes, like, through some cracks and crevices, and he manages to, like, cave another part in so that they can get out.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing that saved them, y'all, was that chalk line, because most of the damage is on the other side of that chalk line.
Mm-hmm. So they decide to douse rod their way to see about, like, they're like, we need another artifact to be able to get us out of here. And so they're on an adventure
with a piece of Kip's shell. They don't, their dowsing rod broke. And so they use a piece of Kip's shell.
So meanwhile, we zippy zap, and Hawk is realizing that this rescue mission that he's on is a sham, and that Magpie is the one who reported it. So he is like, fuck this and fuck that. Goes home. It is morning, by the way. It is the morning of the conquest moon. He gets home. Magpie is drunk as a skunk with some well-dressed man. And he's like, okay, something's up. Because Magpie's like, well, yeah, your wife left. And he's like, Squeakers is back there with no food. She would never. And then yoinks them in front of the guild to get answers.
Right. Oh, and they get answers, except, all right.
Well, yeah,
but he's got to go into that cave.
Boy, he's hardly aware of it. He's too busy jacking off into curtains because the conquest moon is here, buddy.
I mean, but the great thing is that his boner is a homing beacon for Azpeth. And so everybody else is like, it's not safe. Don't do that. We'll get you a sex worker. And all he can think is, wife, mine.
Yeah,
wife.
So anybody who tried to get in his way, it was very clear, like, don't.
He literally picks Rooster up by the scruff of his neck.
Uh-huh. He literally, though, gets down. Wait, I have it. I have the quote.
Please.
He's down. So Hawk is in this red haze of the conquest moon, and, like, nobody can stop him. And you don't want to get in the way of a Taurian and his...
Earlier, listener, Ravel, what's his name? Ravenel?
Raptor
looked at Hawk and was like, you really shouldn't be in the city. You'll kill someone and then rut their corpse. He's like, you're not wrong.
Well, no. So he gets let down into the drop, and there's a team behind him following him because he's just conk-a-donk-a-donk. And he literally says, he thinks to himself, they're staying away from me, as they should.
Yeah.
A Moonstruck Taurian is a dangerous creature. And if I don't find my wife by the time the conquest moon crosses the smaller room, I'm going to turn around and fuck one of them.
Oh, God.
So that's his point of view. Woo! They douse their way around. They find another dead body. And Lark is like, Gwenna, are you dousing for artifacts or dead people?
And they look down there and realize that, like, bitch's hand is glowing because artifacts glow in the dark. And so the answer is both. She's dousing for both. So they end up, they find that other ring, and Azpeth has a crisis.
Importantly, they find the ring in a old Prelian crypt, because they were attached to houses, and they are hiding from rattling. So, like, any noises outside of this crypt that they have locked themselves into, there's no way out. They're like, we just have to wait to get out of here. Mm-hmm. And then they do find a ring.
Yeah. Okay.
I was talking about a different body. The first dousing, they find a different body.
Oh!
And then they douse their way into...
I forgot about that body.
Yeah, so then they douse...
Yeah, that was a new body.
Yeah, because there was nothing on that body. There were no artifacts that they could find. It was fresh.
And it was the guy who was guarding the place.
Mm-hmm.
The ratlings got it.
Blech.
Yeah.
And so then they do find the ratling nest. They find this crypt and then lock themselves in it. They're like, what the fuck are we going to do? And then they do find that ring.
Like, we have to wait. And they don't have a rescue beacon or anything else. But Azbeth is like, the conquest moon is upon us. I'm pretty sure, like, unless he hates my guts absolutely, and that's a definite possibility, Hawk might come find me. Right?
But she's also like, well, she thinks that, but then she's like, as it gets later, by the time they're in the crib, she's like, there's no way that he's kept it together and he's definitely fucking a sex worker right now.
Yeah. Yeah. She's not even mad at him.
We'll see him in a week. Yeah. She's not. She understands.
Yeah.
And then they're hiding in the crypt and we have a very important scene.
Yes, we do.
Where they're sitting up against a wall.
Hey,
Lark tells Meriden softly.
What?
Meriden looks over at her, her expression weary. I need to get something off my chest, just in case we don't get out of here. And Meriden sits up and focuses on Lark and says, what? Lark leans in and gives Meriden the lightest, sweetest kiss on the lips. That.
Oh.
Oh. Meriden touches her mouth, but she's smiling.
I cannot with both of them.
I die.
Same. And then Azbeth is like, oh, I'm so happy for them that they have each other. Like, this is so sweet. And then they hear like some sounds. But all the sounds up until this point have been rattlings.
Well, and you started to comment on this before we realized that we had misunderstood our dead bodies. Because she's having some realizations. And we kind of touched on it at the beginning of the book. But specifically, she's realized to take this ring from this woman. She's literally taking the ring from a dead body. And whenever I've thought about the guild, I've had such a romantic view of it, of dashing through tunnels and uncovering artifacts, just lying about, waiting to be retrieved. Now I know the reality. There are spiders the size of plates. There are rattlings and cave-ins and guild politics. And the dead have faces. And we're robbing them. Take them, become a grave robber, because that's what the guild is, right? It's got a fancy name, but it's just a bunch of people looting corpses. The thought hurts me down to my soul. Is this what I've idolized, glamorized, dreamed of my whole life? I want to learn about old Prel and the magics they used every single day. I don't want to strip the dead of their possessions. I don't know if I can do one without the other.
Yeah.
Oh,
And she's very like, I'm going to leave the ring here. And Meriden steps in and she's like, hey, just from a holder's daughter perspective, my dad wouldn't blink before he cut off all those fingers to get that ring.
Yeah.
Like, and if you do leave it there, the guild is just going to come in and take it anyway.
And then Lark pops in and says, you can leave all of this for someone else. Or you can take the rings and keep them together as they were intended to be. You can honor the people they came from. How do I do that? I ask, aching. Name your kids after them, Lark suggests. I can't pronounce their names. Well, you better muck and practice. And I was like, I love you, Lark. Which, by the way, when we do see the written down names.
Oh, wow.
I can't pronounce that either.
Yep. Yeah, they're pretty wild.
Mm-hmm.
And the audiobook narrator does a wonderful job. Anyway.
Oh, my God. I didn't even consider that. I didn't listen to that part. I didn't listen to the end of the
book. It's good. It's good. I can't remember exactly what it sounds like, but it's unintelligible.
Upon looking at it, it's like.
Yeah, that's essentially what it is. And so now they hear a bunch of like crashes on the other side. And they realize that, like, Hawk is out there and he's just shouting, wife, mine!
Azbeth!
Azbeth! Yeah. And so he breaks in there and immediately goes snurfling all up on her, grabbing her. He, like, rips her skirt and then rips her pants to, like, get at that. And everybody else is like, whoa, 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 come out here and leave the Taurian in there. We'll just lock him in until the conquest moon is over. And she's like, what? No, I absolutely could not do that. Everybody else is like, it doesn't seem safe. And she's like, it's only safe for me. Just like, leave some provisions and come back in a few days and we'll be fine. And so really, like, reluctantly, they leave her in there with Hawk, with like Gwenna's backpack. And immediately he just starts like ripping her clothes off. And she realizes, like, they weren't able to prep her body yet. And so if she wants this to be any kind of positive experience, she has to take control of this.
Well, yeah, because he shoves a finger up her and she's dry.
Oh, God. Yeah. So she ends up, like, doing a striptease for him and stuff. And he's like, mine, wife. And she's like, yours. Correct. Yeah, I'm here and I'm going to be here. But we have to get my body ready. Mm-hmm. And he tries to stick another finger in her and she's like, "Whoa!" And so she backs up and she's like, why don't I show you? So she lays down on the ground and starts fingering herself in front of him.
She gets him on board with eating her out.
Yes.
And she gets real wet, but boy, he doesn't want to stop. He's like, this is my pussy.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tongue fuck it until I'm happy. And she's like, I am too sensitive for this. And the way she gets his attention is she calls him by his name, not Hawk, but who he was before. She's like, Wallach. And he like,
I thought it was Warlock.
It's spelled W-A-L-L-A-C-H.
Oh, cool. That's weird. The audiobook narrator said Warlock.
Oh, interesting. In my head, it was Wallach.
Nice. I like it.
And he like pauses and she's like, oh no, did I fuck up? And then he like crawls up her.
Yeah.
And he's like, mine. And then he does get that gormous penis in her. And she is wet as a waterfall. And she comes a couple of times and then she realizes he's not done. Because she feels that knocking on her pussy door.
Yeah.
And he does shove that puppy up there.
Uh-huh.
And she's
like, I don't love it at first. Like, it's fine. But like,
well, it's also, he feels me. So it feels like something gives inside of me. And then he's like coming like crazy. And she's like just accepting it and all of these things. And it feels great. And then she's like, he warned me that he'd want me and we'd be stuck together. You know, I just didn't ask how long.
Yeah, I didn't ask any clarifying questions.
I should have. Because it's not particularly comfortable. She literally describes herself as feeling like an overfilled water skin after he's coming her.
Because it's not only the giant penis and then the giant knot, but he's also like coming like a gallon into her. And that's got to go somewhere.
Yeah.
And so luckily, after he comes and he's like nodding her, he comes back to himself. Uh-huh. And he's able to like chat with her about everything. And he's like, oh, my God, did I hurt you? And she's like, are no. You okay?
And she's like, you were gentle. And he's like, that doesn't sound right.
No.
And she's like, I mean, you were enthusiastic.
Yeah. And he's like, but that's it was fine. Closer.
Mm-hmm.
So then basically what happens is that every like 15 minutes or so, she gets like 15 minutes of him being in his body and in his mind. She can like clean up a tiny bit on the side. And then he's just on her again.
I love a rut. I love a heat. Uh-huh. I love a uncontrolled sexual frenzy.
Yes. Right?
It's just, they're so fun.
Yeah. Well, and so the next time that it happens, he has her on all fours and it's like it's a fast situation. And then once he comes back to himself, when he knots her, he's like, wait a second. That seemed fast. You didn't come, did you? And she's like, no, it's totally fine. And he's like, this is the best part about this. You're stuck on my knot and I can just touch you and you can squirm on it. So then he makes her come like 3 times as he's knotting her. It's great.
Yeah. They also, while they're talking, it was so cute because he has her knotted the very first time.
Yeah.
And he's like, I could make you come. I could make you come over and over again while you're locked against me, while you're helpless and pinned against my knot. In fact, I'm going to do that. But after you tell me everything that's been going on, spare no detail. And she says, it's a bit of a long story. He says, neither you nor I are going anywhere for a little while, little bird. And so she does. She tells him everything. And then while he's holding her, he's like, I understand why you did this, but Like, you and Barnabas in this situation, you're getting a slap on the wrist. The rest of us, we're going to get caught in the crossfire. And she says, I'm not going to let anything happen to you. And he's like, you couldn't have waited for me to come home, asked me instead of Magpie. And she says, you're too honorable. You wouldn't help.
Yeah.
And then she says, I don't know. I'm just so used to taking everything on, to expecting no one to help me. I'm sorry I didn't come to you. You should have. I'm your husband. It's my job to protect you. You're my husband in name only, remember? That's not what it feels like.
It hasn't felt that way for quite a while. I mean, I was a little unclear here, though, because I fundamentally do not believe that Hawk would have stolen from the guild. So I don't know what he would have done. And that's never clarified. And, like, I kind of needed it to be, because he's sort of very kindly chastising her for, like, not coming to him. But he's not offering up any Monday quarterback better ideas, you know? You have to have heard the phrase Monday quarterback, because football is done on Sunday. And so then Monday morning quarterbacking is being like, oh, they really should have done a better job in quarter three when they did a pass that got intercepted, maybe, or like whatever.
I think
they should have run a better offense.
I think you severely overestimate.
If it's not hockey, you don't know.
Severely. Oh, yeah. If it's not That's hockey, fair. Horses or roller derby, I don't know.
Anyway, he's not offering any better ideas in his 2020 hindsight. Maybe that's a better way to put it. You know?
Yeah.
And I didn't love that.
I agree.
I just,
interesting.
Like,
I whimsied Hawk, the fuck out of it.
You could have, you don't get mad at her when you're not actually telling her what could have been done, you know?
I don't know.
I don't think he would have stolen from the guild.
I don't know that I believe. Frankly, I think that he would have known other options.
Maybe.
It's not like Magpie's hip with the fucking guild rules. Or any of these baby fledglings.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
I don't know.
Just like, you could have, I needed a little bit more specifics there, but Sabrina didn't, and so I might be the outlier here.
You're probably not.
Anyway.
I just didn't care.
Yeah. So they spend like 3 days down in this crypt, fucking every 15 minutes, and then like sleeping sometimes, and eating whatever's in Gwyneth's pack.
Yeah. And then he talks about he's worried because he realizes her spectacles are broken, and he's like, I'm so sorry. And she's like, you didn't do it. They've been broken. And he's like, well, we'll fix it. I know somebody.
We'll get you new ones.
And she's like, you make it seem like we have a future together. And he says, after all this, you doubt me? And she says, no, I'm just feeling needy and lost, and I don't know what's going to happen with me, Hawk. I'm a holder's heir who just got caught stealing from the guild.
Yeah.
I'll be by your side no matter what happens, as long as you want me there. Oh, it's so cute.
The last, like, 20% of this book, Hawk is so goddamn swoony.
So romantic.
Yeah. So they end up going out. She does get mega arrested. Yeah. And then I didn't realize upon the first read, but she ends up spending 18 days
in jail.
Guild jail. Wowza. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so when somebody finally comes to visit her, she's hoping it's Hawk, but she's really also glad that it's her, the rest of her five.
And Kip has a new house. And the dowsing rod that was his old house is very carefully attached to his new house in, like,
in memoriam. Yeah, it's the best.
And he does pull a bunch of stuff out of that house to help her get put back together, because she hasn't been,
She just hasn't had a bath.
She hasn't had a bath. And not only has she not had a bath since being in jail, she hasn't had a bath since before Minotaur cum fountain times.
Yeah.
In a crypt.
She hasn't had it since the crypt. She hasn't had one since the goddamn cave-in. It's been cave-in, crypt,
it's
Minotaur
been like,
fountain cum, and then 18 days of just general living in squalor.
And they haven't even given her water. She's been using her drinking water to, like, tidy up a little bit. Like,
she's ripe. So they get her all dressed and they're like, we're all going together and our trials right now. We're going to be tried by the king.
Melody, I did not Sherlock Holmes how this book would be tied up in a little bow to save my goddamn life.
I didn't either. I just knew that she was going to end up an archivist.
I knew that. And I suspected he was going to become a guild master.
Yeah, because they've been talking about that no Torian's ever been a guild master because they don't respect them enough for that.
We walk in to this trial.
And they don't get to speak.
There's only like 20 pages of this book left. And I was like, how the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
How the fuck? And then, my God, it's not that I doubted her, but like I was a little concerned that I wasn't going to like the end. I was going to feel like it was a slapdash. And then just
she waved around her magical quill.
And like a billion little things that had been drip dropped throughout the entire book that I just wrote off as part of her history, the world, et cetera, et cetera. And all of a sudden,
it all came together.
It all came together. So Magpie gets stripped of her guild ranking. She's found guilty. And bada bing, bada boom, she out. Then Barnabas, the king is not happy about the fact that he was conspiring to take down another hold.
Yep.
And so he gets his slap on the wrist and he does fuss about it and tries to be like, well, this is all a mistake because I was supposed to marry into that family. I'm not doing anything. And then Hawk, that sexy motherfucker, comes up and is like, actually, she's already married, so get fucked.
And then Barnabas tries to be like, ugh, to a guild Torian commoner. And Rooster, for the first time, the guild president, is like, hey, excuse me. So he is a guild master and a very respected member of this organization. So you will not speak to him like that. And she's like, OMG, he's a guild master now. That's incredible. We find out that, like, while the king has been negotiating all of this because he's so mad at her, he's had to do so much work for the past 18 days. Yeah. How dare she? But when Magpie found out that she was, like, if she was going to be stripped of her guild membership, she pushed for Hawk to get her spot as a guild master. And so, you know, Magpie does a little bit to mitigate her awful behavior, but I don't know if anything really can. Anyway, so then the king is like, I'm in a bit of a pickle with you five, because on the one hand, you stole from the guild, which is an immediate, you know, expulsion from the training thing. But on the other hand, you found an artifact of power. And so the tradition there is that you automatically get accepted into the guild if that happens. You don't have to test. You don't have to do anything. And he's like, and I can't have one cross out the other. So all of you are going to be repeaters. You have to work until somebody accepts you again, and then you can rejoin training.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's like, oh, God, that sucks. Okay. And then afterwards, he's like, ask Beth Honori. I want to talk to you in private. And she's like, oh, God. So she goes in there, and she finds out that everybody can be a repeater but her.
Yeah, she's not allowed to re-enter, period. She is banned from the guild.
And she's crushed. And then he's like, also, those rings are awesome, and they create an ever-flowing mist around whatever we want it to be, but I sold it already, so you don't even get to take it to Honori Hold. And she's devastated.
Oh my God.
And then just like, and what are you gonna do if you're not the heir? And she's like, honestly, I haven't thought about that. Like, I've been trying to stay alive and take one problem at a time. And then he's like, all right, well, the guy's gonna come pick up the rings, so... And she's thinking to herself, that's so mean. I have to sit here and watch the handoff of the artifacts I found? This bullshit. And then her goddamn dad walks in.
Turns out, behind the scenes, the mistress that we have been hearing about, him visiting at court all the time, her entire life, basically, since her mother died.
Yeah.
Turns out they are now married. And the reason that they're married is she needed to get the fuck out of court because she at one time had a liaison with the king. And the queen is pregnant and wants her gone. So the king gave her a dowry, which now her father has. And now her father can afford to buy the rings. And they also have a 7-year-old son who is now the Honori Hold heir. And mm-hmm. he's been legitimized. So she is off the hook. Her future is her own.
And her dad's not in charge of the money. The mistress is going to keep hold of the purse strings the whole time.
The lady of the hold yes. is now in charge. Because she says, I understand your concerns. It's a conversation I had with your father prior to our marriage. I am not handing my fortune over simply for him to toss it away. I will control Honori's funds. Father frowns at his new wife. I really don't think. She turns to him and freezes him with a look. I'm in charge of the finances, Corin. You'll recall we've discussed this extensively. You'll have an allowance.
Uh-huh. And she is tickled pink by this. She's just like, Honori Hold is finally in good hands. I don't have to worry about anything anymore. Yep. And I can just live my life, but I have no idea what that means. And Holt is outside of the inn waiting for her when she's done with this, like, lunch with her dad or whatever, because he mm-hmm. won't let Hawk come in. I think I said Holt. Mm-hmm. But Hawk is outside waiting for her, and he's like, okay, so what about you? Because he's already told the rest of the four that, like, he'll take them on any time. Mm-hmm. So they're basically going to, like, immediately re-enter the training. Oh.
But he's so sad. He's like, she's crushed and I can't fix her disappointment. The thing she's wanted to do her entire life. Like, I can't do anything about that. Mm-hmm. We also find out that he used Rooster's love of bureaucracy against him and got him to wave the hand. Yeah. So now it's his hand.
There's no more debt.
And he doesn't have to pay it back. Now he's the guild master. And then they're kind of dancing around this topic of what comes next. And then he finally stops dancing around it and is like, what do you do next? And she's like, I don't know. I never got that far when I was planning everything. I was taking it one step at a time. And he says, you could stay married to me.
Yeah.
And she says, you still want me? Woman, I am obsessed with you. I think I'd lose my mind if you left. But it was supposed to be a marriage of convenience, so you could chaperone me. It's still convenient for me. It will likely be convenient for me in 50 years when I'm old and gray and my horns are pitted. It will be convenient for me until the end of time, Aspeth. Do you understand? I need you. I want you with me. And I know it might be hard for you to stay, but I would love if you tried. And then she launches herself at him and she's like, I love you. I love you. Are you sure? And he says, more than sure. You belong with me. You're my wife, my love, my everything.
Mm-hmm. Oh! It's so good. So then they're like back at the house, right? And she still doesn't know what she's going to do with herself because she's banned from the guild forever. And then at midnight, there's this knock, 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 this urgent knock at the door.
They're in the middle of fucking, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. They're really going to town. But he gets up and answers the door, and Kestrel is there. He's the archivist that we met earlier. And so Hawk is like, get out of here. Like, it can wait until the morning. And Kestrel's like, honestly, it can't. I would love to see the lady of the house. And she comes around and she's like, oh, come in. Like, that's okay. So he asks her for a second opinion on an artifact that's supposed to be shipped out tomorrow. And she gets a better look at everything. And as she's like looking over the runes on the bottom, because everything else looks super legit, she's mm-hmm. like, all the runes are correct. And then she pauses and she goes, oh no, did you say this was going to be shipped out tomorrow? And Kestrel's like, yeah. And she goes, I'm so sorry to tell you this, but I think you have a forgery. And he just goes, yeah, I do.
And the way she clocks it is it's literally two glyphs at the end of the sentence are in the wrong order.
They're transposed. And so he's like, this is the best forgery that's ever existed in the world. I made it myself for training. And I just had to confirm your ultimately amazing skills because I want to offer you a job in the archives.
Yeah. And she's like, but okay, that sounds amazing. But like, why are you here at midnight? And he's like, I needed to get to you first before the black market people get to you, before the forgers get to you. Please.
He's like, I'll make sure you have a salary that's commensurate with any man. And I would seriously, it would be a joy to work with your brilliant brain. And then she's like, but I can't be part of the guild. And he's like, remember, the archives are employed by the guild. We're not part of the guild.
We're contractors.
Hey. And so she's like, and I can come home to Hawk every night because I won't leave my husband. And he's like, yeah, of course, you can walk to the archives from here. You'll be home by dinner every day. And everything is worked out fine. Bo situation.
And then even on top of that, he says, she's like, man, Kestrel, do you think he's kind of like Lark? And, damn it, I almost said Holt, too.
I know.
Hawk says, no, the archivists take bird names as well. You can be Sparrow after all. And she says, you're Sparrow. Wait. Don't hawks hunt sparrows? And he says, they devour them. And she's like, sounds lovely.
Yeah.
And he's like, sure does. And then he swoops her up and takes her to bed. And he's thinking about all of the future things that are going to have to change and all of the plans that they have to make and all of these things. But then he thinks to himself, there's also a Taurian ring ceremony that has to happen.
Oh my God, Hawk, think about the sizes. Think about it. Do you know what I mean?
All of that can wait until the morning. Tonight and every night thereafter, Sparrow is mine.
Oh, golly. This book is wonderful. It was a delight.
This is a warm hug in so many ways.
I needed it. All right, Sabrina, what is your lady love?
My lady love is, I don't think I've talked about this. I don't think I've made this in a lady love before. I recently bought a heated mattress topper.
Oh.
It is a fitted sheet, basically. It's a fitted sheet. It goes under your fitted sheet. And it's a fucking heated mattress topper. You do a little thingamabob and it fucking heats it up. It's not even cold enough for this yet. And it just brings me so much joy because I used to have one and then it died and I just never replaced it. And then a couple of weeks ago, I was like, man, my feet are so cold, but I have to like get up to go put on socks. And like, I just don't want to have to do that. And I was like, man, I really miss that heated mattress topper I used to have. And so that night I fucking went and ordered one and it came in and I put that puppy on and... on like chilly nights that I force to be chilly because I just love a warm bed in a cold room. I turn that thing on and then I go brush my teeth and I go crawl into bed and it's just all toasty warm. At least there's one downside.
Do you sweat like a sweatball?
No, I have a queen size bed and that's plenty of room for me and three dogs, except when every creature in the house wants to be on the half of the bed.
That's warm?
That is warm. Because the mattress topper I got heats both sides separately, right? So, I've learned now. I turn on both sides.
So one for you, one for the dogs.
One for me, one for the dogs. It's fine. And I turn it off before I go to bed. Like, once I get in, it's so nice. It's just so nice. And I can't wait for it to be fucking cold outside and I'll just be able to crawl into my toasty blankies.
I love it.
So that's my lady love. What's your lady love?
My lady love is similar. It is that it is Christmas cactus season, everybody. Ooh, it's Christmas cactus season. So I have a Christmas cactus and they are, you know what that is, right?
Nope.
Okay, so they're a succulent / cactus, and they look just like pieces put together for most of the year. But then once they get triggered by it getting colder outside, they start producing buds upon buds upon buds of these gorgeous flowers that only happen in the wintertime. So I've been babying this Christmas cactus.
That's a cactus?
Yeah. So I got it from my mother-in-law. I took a cutting of her Christmas cactus that's like 25 years old or something. And I've been babying it for 3 years now. It has, up until this point, it's only produced like two or three blooms. Because, you know, it's putting a lot of energy into its root system and establishing itself. And this Christmas cactus, y'all, it has got at least 25 like gorgeous buds on it. And I can't wait for them to bloom. My Christmas cactus, it comes in a variety of colors, but mine blooms in this like really vibrant coral color that like just scratches my brain in all the right ways. And I'm so excited. I keep on just like picking it up off the windowsill and being like, look how much this is. Oh, look.
This is so pretty.
Isn't it gorgeous?
And yeah. Like there's so many different colors it can be. I've never even heard of this.
I love a Christmas cactus. I think I need like four more.
Are they hard to take care of?
No, they're really easy to take care of because cactus. So like you can forget to water it for a while and it'll be fine. And then you just need to keep it on a windowsill in an area where there's like diffused light. So mine's in a north-facing window. And it gets great light for a Christmas cactus. And then because it's right by the window, it's in like one of the coldest parts of the house. Mm-hmm. So as it cools down outside, the glass gets cold and the Christmas cactus is like, it's time to bud. It's time to become beautiful.
That's
and
exciting.
That's what season it is, everybody.
That sounds exactly like my kind of plant.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
One I don't have to spend a whole lot of time thinking about. Mm-hmm. That totally reminds me of the snake plant that I've neglected for my entire time I've had it. And now it's like 4 feet tall.
Yep.
And I don't really know what to do with it. I don't know how to make it more manageable because like forgetting to water it for 2 months, that didn't work.
You just cut it down. Yeah, you just prune it. But Google pruning snake plants. You'll get a whole mess of instructions.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah, and then it'll start growing back up again until it's gigormous, and then you cut it.
All right. Well, anyway.
All right. Keep being a badass and love yourself.
As much as you love
grabbing hold of your destiny and making your dreams come true.
Yeah.
That's exactly what Asbeth did.
I want a sincere one, actually. Yes. That's it. No jokes.
Yeah.
Love y'all.
Love you. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, y'all. Thank you for listening. Time is precious, and so we're really thankful you chose to spend some of yours with us. We'll be back next week with our Thanksgiving book, Boyfriend by Serena Bowen. Heaving Bosoms is produced by us, Melody Carlisle and Sabrina Bradley. Editing is done by me, Melody Carlisle. Our theme music is by the incredible singer-songwriter Brittany Fonts, and our art is by the ultra-talented author Kate Pryor. If you like our show, remember to follow us on your favorite podcast app, rate us 5 stars, and leave a review. That one small action is a huge way to help the show. If you want to get in touch with us for advertising inquiries or anything else, you can email us at heavingbosomspodcast@gmail.com. If you want more of us, visit patreon.com/heavingbosomspodcast. You can also find us on Instagram at heavingbosoms, on TikTok at heaving_bosoms, and in our Facebook group, the Heaving Bosoms Geriatric Friendship Cult. See you next week.